Hi, bonjour, mon nom est Luc et je suis un alcoolique. Hi, my name is Luke and I'm an alcoholic. I got the easy job today because I have to do the historical of AA in Eastern Canada. So it's easy, I got my text, I'm going to read that, no problem. The only problem that I just noticed, that if I make a mistake, somebody in the room will say to me, you're going to come to say to me, it's not the right date, it's not the right name. So be careful with that. Be nice. Be nice, yeah, be kind with me. Jim's going to take me over. Okay, my topic today is how AA arrived in Eastern Canada. First, we have 10 areas. Two in Maritimes, Area 81, Area 82. Four in Area in Ontario, 83, 84, 85, and 86. And finally, four area in Quebec, 87, 88, 89, and 90. We have a lot of meeting in different languages. We have English, French, Spanish, and Inuktitut. All the areas have been working very hard to reach out for the still suffering alcoholics in many ways. I will begin with how I arrived in Ontario. The first man who had a contact with AA was the Reverend George A. Little, a non-alcoholic. He ordered the big book and received it in October 1942. Then he gave a copy to the non-alcoholic Reverend Percy G. Price, who was the assistant pastor of the Metropolitan United Church. Those two non-alcoholics were so enthusiastic about AA that they held the first meeting on January 13, 1943, at the Little Denmark restaurant in Ontario, accompanied by six alcoholics. A second meeting was held 1 week later, and so Alcoholics Anonymous in Ontario was born. They decided to move the meeting at the Metropolitan United Church house, and attendance tripled within a few weeks. At the February 25th meeting, the first woman attend this meeting. Then meeting began in Toronto, Windsor, and London. On December 16, 1943, at the Royal York Hotel in Toronto, 80 people enjoy a banquet and celebrate their new friends and, more importantly, their sobriety. In the following years, AA continued to grow up in many towns, and in 1945, the first women's group was formed. In 1947, the first panel meeting took place at Mimico Reformer Terry. Oh, Jesus. I got a problem with that one. Reformatory. Yes, I think I got it. Initiated by Dr. Little. This meeting was likely the first of this kind in the Canadian penal system. On February 7 and 8, an international regional meeting was held in Toronto, and Bill W. addressed in two meetings. In April 1951, Adam C. was elected as Ontario's first delegate, and in 1953, he was the first Canadian to serve on the Board of Trustees from January 1953 until April 57. By February 25th, 56, 194 Ontario-based group as registered. In the 60s, the only Canadian non-alcoholic trustee, Gordon Patrick, was the chairman of the GSO board, and in 67, Ontario was defined into four areas, as it is today. In 1965, the 30th International Convention was held in Toronto for the first time outside the USA. About 11,000 attended, yeah, and this event, Bill W. introduced the pledge of I am responsible. Since those years, AA in Ontario was still growing up and still does, and in 2005, the International Convention came back in Toronto to celebrate the 70th anniversary of AA. All my reference came from the book, 50 Years, the History of AA in Ontario. Now let's talk about the Maritime. And all my reference come from the book 50 Years of AA in Nova Scotia. In the early year of 1940, some individual with the head of the Big Book were staying sober, but it was in December 46 that the first A group was organized in Nova Scotia and New Glasgow group registered in January 1947. Many places contribute to the birth of AA in Nova Scotia. For the rest of the Maritime, in spring 47, the first group appears in Charlottetown in Prince Edward Island, and in July of the same year in Moncton, New Brunswick. In 49, the AA group in Corner Brook, Newfoundland, was started, and shortly after, a group was organized in St. John's, and AA had finally reached all four of the Atlantic province. After a meeting in Moncton on October 10, 48, the Maritime Intergroup Association was organized with headquarters at Moncton. Because of the distance between groups in June 49, a Nova Scotia AA newsletter had been created, the Blue Nose Bulletin. In December 56, the name was changed to the Atlantic Anchorage. It was decided at the 66th Assembly that due to the lack of support, it be discontinued. In 51, at the fourth annual meeting of the Maritime Intergroup Association in St. John, New Brunswick, was the selection of the first delegate. By October 51, Nova Scotia had 22 groups, New Brunswick 28, Prince Edward Island 3, and 2 groups in Newfoundland. On March 6, 53, the first AA women group was created in Halifax, Nova Scotia. In October 63, at the area assembly, it was voted that they're going to have 2 delegates and create 2 area. At the first Nova Scotia Newfoundland Assembly in October 64, Labrador was included in the area. In the 70s, with the hard work of the Public Information Committee, AA kept growing in the Maritimes. They began to have roundup in Windsor, Truro, and Halifax. In 1980, the Eastern Canada Regional Forum was held in Moncton, New Brunswick. In 86, in Halifax, Nova Scotia. In 93, an Eastern Canada Special Forum was held in Charlottetown in Prince Edward Island. The last Eastern Canada Regional Forum was the Maritime Receive was in Truro, Nova Scotia in 2008. In 2017, they're going to have the Serrazza in Moncton. Yes. Even that, the Maritime is geographically one of the largest area in Canada and difficult to travel, we can see that AA still growing up and live well in the Atlantic province. And now let's talk about AA in Quebec. In 44, Dave B. was in jail and his sister gave him the Big Book. His sister? Yeah, okay. And then he contacted Bobby B. in New York asking for help. Then she gave him information about people in Quebec asking for help. And they began to have contact with them. He had a hard time and was not doing the in the right way. But finally, the first AA meeting began in 45 in Dave's house. In May 45, we count 28 members and the move to a meeting to the forum in Montreal. In 47, there was over 100 members. And late that year, the first French-Canadian meeting was held in Montreal. In 49, Montreal was counting 400 members and 18 groups. In the same year, Bill and Lois attend the first roundup and the 12 steps were translated for the first time in French. In 1950, the Montreal Intergroup was created and some French members began to travel around the province to help create new AA groups. The first bilingual group was created in Matane in 45 by Dr. Roland B., and more groups around the province. Dave B. participated at the conference for 51 to 55, but in 1963, the first delegate was elected, and most of the work was to translate service material for helping groups to know the AA structure. Then, a literature committee was created to translate the AA literature into French language. The March 2, 1963, is a great date for the French member. The translation of the Big Book was done. Even if it was not the conference approved, It did help the French members. In the late 70s, a lot of French meeting was created, and in 1976, the four areas in Quebec. Another great event was the International Convention in 1985 in Montreal. AA was celebrating 50 years. Since the late 90s, all the translation in French is done by the GSO. So this is my little presentation about AA began in Eastern Canada. So even if you come to visit the Maritime, Ontario, or Quebec, you will find AA everywhere. Thanks a lot.
Merci beaucoup, Luc. I can't say merci beaucoup because I'm pretty sure everyone here knows what merci beaucoup means. I think Luc went over his fear to deliver this nice presentation, and this is what it's all about. Being over our fears in order to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholics. No matter who we are, what we're doing, the most important job is an alcoholic who talks to another one, no matter at what level of service we are. So thank you very much, Luc. And our next speaker, my good friend, good buddy, Jim W.
Give me 10 minutes. Okay. Hi, everyone. I'm an alcoholic, a member of the Paradise Group in Hamilton, Ontario. And my name is Jim. All right, for the Paradise Group. We meet on Thursday night at 8 o'clock. You're all welcome. My sponsor likes to tell people that I'm the guy that crashed his car into a church and started a meeting 2 years later there. I didn't quite hit the church, but until last year, when they repaved the intersection, the marks on the road were still there. Yes, I rode off the family car there. This session is about meeting your neighbors, and boy, I have met a lot. I have met a lot. And a few of us tried to get into the meeting that was here before, Peace and Serenity, and the room was just filled. And so I went out and grabbed a seat out in the hallway. And I met a wonderful young lady that had a little bit of a meltdown because she couldn't get a seat in the Peace and Serenity meeting. So she came out to join us outside. And we sat along the edge. And before too long, we had our own Peace and Serenity meeting out there in the hallway. And there was what? There must have been about, 15 of us. And they started reciting the steps and the traditions and how it works. And we all took our time and we all shared around and had our meeting. And people were walking by staring at us and thinking, they're having a meeting. They're just alcoholics, just stop anywhere and have a meeting. Well, that's what we do, right? That was the next best thing. So we had our own Peace and Serenity meeting there, and I asked the young lady when she was done, I said, are you full of peace and serenity now? And she was. You know, and this is her first international convention. And it was so nice to see the calmness come in her when she got a chance to speak, and she's here with her mom, and it's pretty neat. And I just finished meeting three sisters here in this room, and I call them happy, joyous, and free, and they're sitting back there. Right? One's from Illinois, one's from Florida, and one's from California. And their dad, who was 39 years sober, bought them tickets to come here and then passed away. But they're here, right? Happy, joyous, and free. I told you I was going to talk about you. So, my dry date is December 19, 1987. And it may not impress you, but it certainly impresses me, because I didn't think I can go a day without a drink. I did not think I could go a day without a drink. And I was hooked. I mean, that first thing in the morning, right straight from the bottle, and it was that, just to get to work. And that was in my last days, you know. And I worked at a steel company and worked shifts for 40 years. And a lot of times I would have to have that little nip of courage first thing in the morning just to get to work. And I'm going to, since we only got 20 minutes, I'm going to go ahead a little bit in a second, but I want to tell you that my dad put the cork in the jug when he was 19. Never to take another drink again, but stayed pissed off at the world for the next 52 years. Right? He was not happy, joyous, and free, I'll tell you. He did not find these rooms. But I had an aunt that was sober over 30 years. And she come along and certainly planted the seed for me. And watching it grow, and there's no way I wanted to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. No way at all. And she used to get me to take her to her meeting. She lived with us for a while. She used to get me to take her to her meeting and say, well, it's no sense going for coffee. Come on in. It's only an hour. Lying through her teeth, you know. And we have to get there an hour early so she could yap with her friends. And then she had me sit right up in the front row. And she sat beside. And any time a speaker said something that she thought I ought to identify with, I got an elbow in the ribs. And then I had to drag her out because she wanted to have that fellowship at the end of the meeting and talk with all of her friends again. So it was a 3-hour deal by the time I got her home, but she would quiz me all the way home. And she quizzed me about, did you hear when the speaker said this and did you hear when the speaker said that? And I said, yeah, I heard. But I couldn't wait to get her home, to get her off to bed, and my wife off to bed, and the kids settled down, so I could do some uninterrupted drinking. And my wife and I back then used to play a little line game where she would mark the line on the bottles. And I'd have to fill the bottles back up with water. So she wouldn't know until it got too much that even I didn't want to drink it. Then you got to go to the store and get another bottle and fill that bottle back up. You dare not pour that stuff out of the bottle, though, that was in there, because there had to be some alcohol in there. And we used to play games like that. I can remember my wife coming home one day with some cough drops. She said, you've been coughing up a storm. You must be coming down with something. But every time I opened up a can of beer, you know that little shh, she could hear that 3 floors up. Right? So it got so bad that I didn't know that my wife was running interference when the phone was ringing every day. And people were asking her questions. Can't you control your husband? Why does he have to drink that much? How come he dropped his pants in the middle of the party? And she wouldn't say, here, it's for you. They didn't want to talk to me, because they knew I'd just hang up. But it got to a point where she questioned me about all these phone calls. And she said those words, we have to talk. And I come home from work and had dinner. And it was time to talk. And I ended up walking right out of that room, backing out. Didn't want to talk about nothing. And ended up with my first impaired. And not talking and just going out for a couple just to do some thinking about what she had to talk about. I ended up getting charged with impaired and blowing a 180. Just having a couple. And I can remember going to court. I didn't get a lawyer and I went to court. And I ended up knowing the judge. Because my dad used to drop a bottle off to the judge, and I figured this guy would understand. He might remember me as a kid, But I used to run up and knock on the judge's door and present him with the bottle on a Sunday morning. And he was in a dirty old bathrobe, hadn't shaved, he was sweating, and his hands were just shaking, and that's what I thought an alcoholic was. And I figured, I'm up in front of this guy, he's going to give me a break. He just might remember me as a kid. And I got charged $500 fine, lost my license for a year. The judge said, have you got anything to say, son? And I said, yeah, I do. I got a problem, and I'm going to do something about it. Well, never let your wife hear you say that in open court. Because now I've got a problem, and we're going to do something about it, right? Yep. So every day when I come home from work, she said, what about going to Alcoholics Anonymous? What about going to a meeting? Your aunt went. Why don't you give her a call? No, thank you. Those people are way too old, and I don't want to go there. I'm not that bad. Well, I'm here to tell you. You know, when that judge said, and I told that judge, I got a problem, I'm going to do something about it, I did. And 3 months later, I got charged again. I was supposed to be going to a Christmas party for a food company, a grocery store company. $28 a couple, all drinks included. I'm thinking, I hope they got enough. What am I going to do if they run out of rum? What am I going to drink then? Oh, should I take a bottle with me? Right, put it in the trunk. These are the big questions I had. Oh, I might have to switch to rye. That would be terrible, but I'll do it. I never made it to that party. I don't know about you, but when I know I'm going out drinking, I like to have a couple drinks first. So Saturday afternoon, I'm sitting there watching wrestling. I'm a big wrestling fan, as some of you know. And I'm watching wrestling. My wife walks by and said to me, what are you doing? I said, I'm just having one. Get off my back. Geez, a guy can't even have a beer with his lunch. What's the world coming to? Well, when my wife was talking to me 2 weeks later, she said to me, you were fine at dinner. I said, we had dinner? I don't remember. I was in a blackout. But that night, I hopped in my car. I drove 4 blocks to Upper Paradise in Mohawk, where the Paradise Group is located. The light was red. I stopped a little bit over that white line, like 15 feet. And I stopped right in the middle of the intersection after I hit the guy that was going through it. And I ripped off the side of his car. Spun around. And I got out of the car, went over, sat on the sidewalk. Now, there was a fella who was a member of St. John's Ambulance, stopped just to see if this drunk was okay. He could hear the sirens coming, checked and see if it was okay, that was fine, so he drove off. And that fella and I are passed across before. And when my son was born premature, his granddaughter was born premature. We were both in the hospital washing up together years before that, and I didn't know. But, you know, we were standing beside one another. After I got released from the police department in the morning, I come home and passed out. When I woke up, Susan was crying. She had everything I owned packed in luggage by GLAD. 10 mattress suitcases for $1.49. And I was on my way out, and she was going to have to do the hardest thing she's ever had to do, was to tell me to get out of the house. And so, how am I going to talk my way out of this one? What brilliant idea could I come up with that's going to make everything okay? I know, I'll call Alcoholics Anonymous. So I made the call. And a fellow called me back, and his nickname was Honest John, and he said, I cannot help you. I got a previous commitment, but if you can hang on for a little while, one of my buddies will look after you. So one of his buddies called me and said, you know, you got a problem drinking? I said, boy, do I ever. He said, I give him a name and address, and he come over. He said, he's going to take me to a meeting. I said, okay. So I announced to my wife, I'm going to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And she said, whoop-de-doo. Big deal. You just rode off the family car last night, and now you announced that you're going to a meeting. It's not going to make everything okay. Well, this fella Jack, and I watched him, he drove up and is in front of the house, and his defenders were flapping on his car. He had one of them alcoholic mobiles, you know, all rusted and flapping and wired together. And he got out, and I watched him come up the sidewalk, and I'm looking out the kitchen window, and I said, I'm thinking, they really sent me an alcoholic. Look at him. And this is the guy that's going to help me. And I'm judging him. He ended up knocking on the door saying his name was Jack, and he announced to my wife, you know, I'm going to take me to a meeting, and she said, well, I hope you have those meetings 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, because you can keep them. I don't want them. He said, oh, no, I'm going to bring them back. Don't worry. And Jack took me to a meeting that night as well. But he took me down to the mission. And I went down there, and I figured out how they keep you in AA, because it was just filled with food. And everybody was so happy, and I figured they feed you in AA. And that's why they keep you there, but I didn't know it was a gratitude meeting. And I'm looking around the room thinking, I can help some of these guys, just give me a couple of weeks. And I was the only one that wasn't sober. I was the new guy. And Jack told me a story and gave me a bit of hope that, yeah, maybe I could follow in his footsteps. And he said to me, and what happened with you? And I told him, I just rode off the car 6 days before Christmas. He said, where? I said, Upper Paradise in Mohawk. He said, was that you? I said, yeah. He said, I stopped. I'm a member of St. John's Ambulance. And I stopped to see if you were okay. Third time. That was not organized. Well, it was by up there. And Jack just didn't give me a list and say, you know, here's 90 meetings, 90 days, away you go. He took me to a meeting every day. And then it was one of his sponsees ended up driving me to a meeting for 6 months. And I finally found out he didn't have a license either. But he picked me up every Tuesday night. He took me to a meeting. You know, we went all over the place, eh? I figured, well, one of us is going to get arrested. You know, but I did end up, you know, after 3 months, or after a little while, I joined Jack's group, and, you know, my first job in AA was ashtrays. He asked me if I had a high school education or university, and I said, well, yeah, high school. You know, and he went to get me a job, talked to a couple old-timers in the back of the room, and I saw them shaking their heads. No. He come back. He said, yeah, it was rough, but I got a job for you, ashtrays. I said, ashtrays? He said, well, you can handle it, can't you? I said, well, yes, I can. Why? He said, well, the guy on the mop wants to move up. I said, okay, I got ashtrays. It's an 8:30 meeting. What time? He said, 6 o'clock. 6 o'clock for ashtrays? He said, well, you got to put the chairs out. We got to make the coffee, and then we got to work the door. And we worked the door, and he made me shake everybody's hand. And then Jack would say, well, look, there's one now. I said, one. He said, there's a new guy. Go on over and talk to him. Help him out. I said, what can I possibly say? I got 3 months. He said, tell him how you got 3 months. He's not going to listen to me. Go go on over and talk to him. And I didn't know, but Jack was using me as a message of hope to the new guy. And I just followed in Jack's footsteps, you know. Ended up starting a Paradise group a couple years later. Resentment in a coffee pot will start your group. They wouldn't let me get into service, you know. They kept wanting to keep me on ashtrays because I was doing a great job. But I wanted a little more. And look at things now. You know, I get the privilege and honor of serving with these fine gentlemen. We're all panel 64 delegates. And there's a few more in the crowd. And what a rush that was. I'm telling you, they tell you to hang on to your ass because you're in for the ride of your life. And that is so true. You know, I've experienced things at the General Service Office that given me goosebumps right now. Service is a wonderful thing. I did a presentation while I was down there, and it was one of the themes was safeguarding our traditions through the evolution of technology, and what a mouthful that was. I'll tell you, that kept me up for two nights just thinking about it. And how am I going to do a presentation on that? But I decided to keep things simple, do a little research, went through the digital archives of the Grapevine, and it took me to an article written by Bill in 1951. Because one of the questions was that I had, how do we get to from back then to now? What's through the evolution of technology now? And Bill basically said, through unity and service, we're going to keep this thing going. We're going to keep it going. And those are the only two things that's going to help keep this thing going. Plus a few dollars. And I was just telling some people out in the hallway, too, you know, a few dollars. In 1945, when they were throwing a dollar into the basket and sending it around, if you were to match the same buying power of that dollar today, you'd have to throw $13 in the basket. So if you're just throwing a dollar in the basket today, it's worth 8 cents. And it's not going to be enough. It even costs money to put this on so that we could all celebrate being happy, joyous, and free. And today, up here, I am happy, joyous, and free. And in my heart. And I want to thank all of my wonderful neighbors here for helping me get there. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jim W. Great presentation. Jim, you want to do it again? It was so nice. Thank you very much for your answer.
You want me to do it in French?
Go ahead.
Okay, I
got to
talk to
Luke
for a minute.
Our next presenter, my good friend Dave A.
Hi everyone, I'm Dave A. I'm an alcoholic, and I just like to, it's what a privilege it is to celebrate 80 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm standing here because what's known at our General Service Office as a loving invitation. It's a little more than that. You're basically being told, but it is an honor to be here, and I thank you, Jim and Luke and
Richard.
Look, I'm off to a good start here, aren't I? This one was well rehearsed, you can tell, eh? For those of you who aren't Canadian, the A thing, you could hear that once in a while. They made my name tag Dave AA, so I don't know, it might be a Canadian thing. Anyways, I don't usually do this, but some places they say their home group, and my home group, which I'm very proud of, is the Dorchester Intramural Group. For those that don't know, the word intramural means within the walls of an institution. My home group is a federal, medium security federal prison. And I'm very proud of that group. Our members, of course, are incarcerated, and I chose to become a member of that group simply because I felt that would probably be the where I could be of maximum service to Alcoholics Anonymous. And believe me, it is a powerful and truly a rewarding experience, and has been since I came in early recovery. Just as a fact, Dorchester Intramural, or Dorchester Prison, is the first and oldest active registered prison group in Canada. It lasts, just before we left, we celebrated 66 years, June 22nd this year. Our group anniversary is 1949. And I mentioned to them before I came here, I said, you fellas, I want you to know that I'm here to make sure that people know about you guys. They're very very near and dear to my heart. Actually, if anyone's reading the grapevine, one of our members was selected to write a story, and he was just tickled pink. He's just thrilled. The guy did 33 years, and he wrote an article in the Grapevine, the one that just went by, the prison issue, and that's a very good friend of mine. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous makes all of these things possible in our lives, and so I'll just maybe get things, begin with, I know a lot of people hate to hear this from the fellow at the mic, but I'm going to begin at the beginning. of my story, what I have determined to be my story, and that is that I, in the beginning, I was adopted. That in itself is not such a tragic thing, but I found that in respect to my story, it seemed to have had an impact on me because I carried that around with me, feeling very disconnected from things that some people seem to be very comfortable with within the family and all other sorts of things. And, you know, I found out later on in life that, you know, I was hearing a story on our national broadcast network, CBC, about how adopted kids tend to have substance, larger than average substance abuse problems. And so at that time I was very active drinking, and I quickly felt that that explains it all. That explains me. That's the thing that I needed to connect with to say that this was okay. And I continued to drink for 27 years, which is, believe me, it's not a marathon. It's nothing I'm proud of, but it defined me and it became me, and it was everything that I lived for by the end of it. And it brought me to the edge, to a point in my life where I felt, you know, let me just start with my first drink and my last drink. Probably my first drink allowed me, for the first time in my life, to feel connected, to feel a part of, to be feeling like I belonged for the first time in my life. And that was, of course, as I was an early teenager. And so why, in heaven's name, would you try and do anything different than that? So I carried that one along until, as we all know, alcoholism is very progressive, and that was the case in my situation, where I felt very disconnected. My family was gone. My health was not very good. My job was on the edge. Certainly, I had lost myself. I was totally disconnected from everything in my life that was near and dear to me, my kids and wife and all. That just went out the door years before. And I got to the point where I had determined that it was probably the best solution that I could come up with. It was probably much simpler to just end it all. I think some of us may know about that feeling. And when actually we've experienced that just recently, a friend of ours had determined that, my son's best friend, we found out this morning. had taken his life. So that's what alcoholism will do for us. I drank to connect, but I was certainly not connected by the end of it. And that's the point that I had determined that was the solution that I had, the only solution that I could come up with. And when I was going through all of this this battle in my head, and I can just remember looking at that. You know, I had a mattress on the floor. There was no bed. Just the mattress. And looking back, I remember it. This is my last drink. The first drink was certainly different than my last drink. My last drink, I had determined, I was looking back at the gun closet and the artillery, the shells and all that, and I had determined that was the only solution that I had. Something, and I think we all know what it is now, but I didn't know it at the time. All of a sudden, my doorbell rang. My daughter was... by then, of course, certainly well removed from my life and any other meaningful relationship was gone. I was alone and certainly disconnected from all of it. And that was it. That's as far as that, I said, what's the point? And my doorbell rings and my 15-year-old daughter at the time showed up at my door. For some unknown reason at 2 in the morning, because we hadn't seen each other for a good long time, and the very next day, I think I had my first spiritual awakening without realizing it, and I sought help. I called someone who shouldn't have answered the phone, and... who later, I might add, became my wife, and she's sitting right here. She's been a great support for me, and I love you very much. So all of a sudden, for the first time in my life, I said, I think I have a problem. And she didn't argue, because we had quite a rocky relationship, if you know what I mean, off again, on again, several times, we lost count. And we hadn't spoken for a long, long time. And she did not dispute that. So that began my journey to first reconnecting with a meaningful relationship. I didn't know that there was a God up there that was moving me in places that I never wanted to go. And so I found Alcoholics Anonymous. Sobriety wasn't enough for me after 14 months. I had determined that I was returning back to the way that I was thinking prior to sobering up. So sobriety was certainly not enough for me. And then I asked a man to be my sponsor, and I was sure that he would not. You know, I said, "Well, you know, I had a list of three, and I'll just go down the list and I'll figure it out. That's my problem. I figure things out." And he graciously, the first guy I asked, graciously said, "Yes, I'll be your sponsor." And he determined how this was going to go. Can everyone hear me back there okay? Okay. Happy, joyous, and free? That became my journey into sobriety. This man walked me through the steps of the big book, as he was shown by his sponsor. This man, little did I know, thank God we don't get into personalities, or we shouldn't get into personalities. Had I known his occupation, I probably wouldn't have asked him. Turns out he was the warden of a prison. Wasn't my kind of guy at the time. Anyway, he graciously walked me through the steps. Hence, I became involved in the correctional facilities in Canada, and very active to this day. That's the very most rewarding thing I've ever found myself involved with, and to this day. From that point, I found out about service. The recovery led me to the service. And the service was very important to keep me still, as again, I seem to go back to this word connected. I think that's what we are really looking for in this thing, in Alcoholics Anonymous. That connection is love. And when we connect, as we have done in this wonderful event for Alcoholics Anonymous, celebration of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's just a beautiful thing. As we meet old friends and new friends from all over the world, what a beautiful fellowship we have for that. And I think that's probably what I was looking for all along. I just wanted something or somebody. I just, you know, I was so empty and alone. So I found Alcoholics Anonymous and found the service structure through, well, first off, he said, well, you're going to join a group. We're going to do the steps. You're going to get active. So I joined his group, and the first duty that I got, and believe me, it doesn't sound like much of a challenge to some of you, but door greeter, for me, that was a challenge because I'm quite an introvert. For me to be standing here is quite a thing, I got to tell you. I'm not the kind of guy that usually gets in front of a microphone. It never would have happened. And here I am. However, I had to actually meet people and shake their hands and ask, how are you doing? And again, I was connecting with other alcoholics and eventually becoming interested in them, and they were equally interested in me. And that was the importance of service. Going through the service structure, I took on different tasks, but I stayed mostly my biggest passion, of course, would be with the corrections. I can't tell you how much that means to me, and I've found how much it means to others. The situations that it's brought us through, the miracles that I've experienced through that. I mean, it happens in all aspects of Alcoholics Anonymous, but that's the one that I know about the best. And through that, I think the lady that was to become my wife later kind of joined in with my interest in that. And in our area, we have the great privilege of being able to take our inmates from the prison out to outside meetings. It's citizen escorting. I've been doing that for about 15 years now, and I've seen some just miraculous things take place in Alcoholics Anonymous. So endless, I just can't describe it, and it happens to me every time. I've chosen the Dorchester group to be my group because I'm excited every time I go there. I miss it every time. We meet Thursday night as well. Oh, I lied. We just changed to Monday. It was Thursday up until just a little while ago. And I look forward to it every single time that we head out there. There's not a lot of us involved in it, but the ones that are, and I heard this earlier, they're very dedicated. And so we see many examples of what the program, and again, it's that connection. Through these escort excursions that my wife and I have been able to do, we've had so many beautiful experiences. I just gotta talk about one that we were just talking about earlier today, or I think it was sometime within the last 24 hours, about one of our friends had two of them. We just head over. They just got released to a halfway house. For the last three Christmases, we've had men that were incarcerated for life and released. One was 27 years, and the other one was 14 years last Christmas at our table. The last three Christmases, we've had men at our table at Christmas dinner, and what a blessing. And these men have been disconnected from their family and friends, and you know, and it's just been quite a thrill. Jimmy just got his full parole before we left. He's an Inuit man, served 27 years, and last Christmas, he walked into our house, and his culture, of course, he doesn't understand our culture. He just doesn't understand it. He was raised in a very remote community, and he walked into our home, and he just, whoa. We had a little fire in the fireplace, you know, a little decoration thing, you know, make them feel welcome and stuff like that. He says, I've never seen a real fireplace before. He didn't know what to do with a Christmas gift. So we had a chance to connect in that way, and I can't tell you, it was just like having a kid in, you know, a new kid with their first Christmas. It was just so beautiful. So I think what I'm trying to say is connection is what it's all about for me, from that disconnected person to the connected, the connectivity, the love that we feel. You know, what do I got, 5?
15.
15? Okay. Let's backtrack then. Anyways, when I got, and I will backtrack because I was just thinking before I I'll just talk a little bit about service. I think it's important that we hear about service, and maybe try and roll a little unity in there too, because after all, we have three sides of that triangle. I heard that at our general service conference, just last conference, and we hear about recovery a lot. Sometimes we hear a little bit about service, but we don't seem to hear all that much about unity, and they are equal sides. They are equally as important. We just don't hear as much about that. My first area assembly, I was not even the GSR, and I remember we were debating. I remember reading the service manual, and they were talking about this area assembly up in this place called Tracadie, New Brunswick. Well, I said, well, aren't we supposed to send somebody to this thing? It's an area assembly. And the GSR said, well, I don't want to go. And the alternate says, I can't go. And they said, well, what are we going to do? And who's going to go? I said, and this is very uncharacteristic of me, and I stuck up my hand and I said, well, I'll go. It was already going on. It was Friday night at my home group. And then I first quickly had to go home, and they gave me $100 to do this for the whole weekend. I had my alcoholic car with the fenders flapping in the wind. I was very new in sobriety. And a big long floater thing there, like 18, 19 feet long. Sucked up gas like you wouldn't believe. They gave me $100. It probably took that just to get up there. And I quickly realized, first I had to find out, where is Tracadie, New Brunswick? I didn't know. And then I got to thinking this through. I said, geez, where am I going to stay? Well, I could sleep in the car. I've done that often enough when I was drinking. I did travel the roads an awful lot. And then came the question of, and then I got the dog, and I don't think I got enough for food. So I packed a big load, a bag of sandwiches and a cooler, and then accommodations, I had a tent. So everything went in the car, and away I went to this place called Tracadie, New Brunswick. Never been there before. Found it and put up the tent. And mind you, this is Canada. This is the end of October. So needless to say, I brought some extra blankets, lots. And me and my little dog curled up for the night. And I went into the area assembly the Saturday morning. And I didn't know what to do. What am I supposed to do? Nobody told me nothing. I wasn't even the GSR. So I thought I should take some notes, which I brought a notebook, and I sat at the only available seat. And I didn't know what was going on, and who should I sit beside? It was this really nice lady, and she said to me, I said, I have no idea what she could see it. Like the fear was all over me. I have no idea what I'm doing here. She says, that's okay, dear. You just stick with me. That lady, and this is, I think, by then I was starting to pray out of fear probably more than anything. And lo and behold, that was a trustee. Her name was Marnie H. She was in Thunder Bay. And I sat, and that was our trustee. And I was bitten by the service bug. So I guess that's part of my story. How I connected with this lady, and she was a fine example of how AA could be so much fun, and it wasn't so intimidating, and there was nothing political about it at all. We were just trying to help alcoholics. That's what we do here. It's no more complicated than that. And we try and make good judgment and keep them in mind in our primary purpose. I think that's what we should focus on, and so that's what I try to do. So this title of delegate, this is certainly, it's been an honor to make it. I have no idea how this happened. I talked to my conference buddy. You get a conference buddy before you go to the conference, and mine was Steve O. from Pennsylvania. I've just seen him here a couple times. Yeah, and I said, how in heaven's name have I been put in this position? He says, well, it's very simple. You're an alcoholic. Oh, okay. So I didn't bring the tent to New York last year. I left that at home. They put us up in a nice motel. And You know, I was able to serve on the Report and Charter Committee. We went through, of course, those that don't know what the Report and Charter Committee is, it's the service manual. We make changes in the service manual. Good thing I read it back then. And, of course, the whole conference makes the changes, but we review it, the final report, and the directories. So that was a great thrill. But then they put me on a secondary committee, which is, of all things, international conventions and regional forums. What a thrill. What a thrill. Never in my wildest dreams, and as Jim was saying about hang on to your seat, it has been a marvelous, marvelous ride, one that I never could have imagined nor dreamt. On our way down here, I might as well, I'm going to wrap it up there in a few minutes.
Done.
I'm done. Now?
Count it in French. We count in French.
I'm done.
Thank you very much, Dave. How about a warm thank you for Luke, Jim, and Dave?